Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined only by Josh Brown.
Hello, what do I owe this honour?
Well, Metro Exodus is what got you pass into such a fantastic place to be, because me and you are the only two that have got privy to Metro Exodus so far, and you've done the reviews, which is hopefully going to be online by the time you guys see this. If
hopefully.
Not, it'll be very soon.
I'll be very disappointed.
But Josh did the review. It doesn't matter about today's and tomorrow's because, you know, coverage. But yes, hopefully the Metro Exodus review will be online. You can reveal what you gave it now.
I give it 4 stars out of 5.
Dear Lord, I kind of thought we'd just do this podcast to talk about Exodus and talk about your thoughts on it and just generally pick apart why you give it 4 stars and yeah, just sort of a general impressions of it. So what were your overall sort of thoughts on it in general? I've not seen the review.
Well, it makes, and I'm sure we'll get into it, it makes a terrible, terrible first impression.
Yes, it does.
But once it opens up, it is a really major stride forward for the franchise as a whole. Mm. I'm sure a lot of people will prefer it to be this small kind of niche shooter set in the Metro tunnels, but by going in this semi-sandbox route, I think it's really widened its scope, both literally and metaphorically. I think there are a lot of shortcomings. It's a very flawed game. It's not quite, I said in my review, not quite the Witcher 3 moment for the franchise that I think a lot of us were hoping slash expecting it to be, but it's a solid game, and it's a really great kind of post-apocalyptic shooter.
So I think to quickly address, if you don't know the Metro games before, because it's strange, it feels a little bit like they've had the same kind of reputation that the older Witcher games had, where people knew of them for a while. And yeah, everyone, well, especially people like me, were thinking that Exodus was going to be their Witcher 3 moment. And yeah, the opening stuff is just a slog. But in terms of like the general premise, like you have this idea that nuclear bombs went off, forced humanity underground, and you basically just follow like this one Russian city. And then in Exodus, immediately we're up on the ground and we're like out on trains and we're going to explore.
Well, that's it, without spoiling too much. But the intro suffers because it does have to jump through a lot of hoops to sort of justify the fact that you're out of the metro station. And even if I played the other two games and know them relatively well, it's been a while since I played them, but I know the story and stuff. And even I was trying to catch up with who these characters were and like brush up with the new lore, essentially, because it needs to excuse the fact that you're now on the surface and you're now exploring without a gas mask, because in the other games, the surface world was too irradiated and there was apparently only 50,000 people left. And now it's like, no, we're starting again, we're opening it up. And the intro does struggle to justify that, but once it does, it gets better.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really struck me, because we're talking about like the opening sort of hour and a half is really, I mean, I'm not reviewing it, so it doesn't matter. I'm going to say turgid. I really hated that opening bit.
Yeah.
because you have all these kind of systems that you get assailed with, which, you know, if you've played the other Metro games, you know about like different mini menus that you have and holding different buttons and how to activate stuff like your night vision and your little lighter and things like that. But it seems to be in a rush to get to a place with not a whole lot of propulsion. Sort of like, you know, you've got kind of awkward, mostly bad line delivery. I wish I could put it in Russian. And I don't think that's an option.
But it's not, sadly.
And so that kind of sucks. And you've got this kind of weirdly rushed dialogue or weirdly rushed narrative where like different things seem to be firing off left, right and centre, but then you kind of go, okay, what are we actually doing? Why are we sort of leaving the underground? What's actually going on? And they get there, but that opening bit is kind of bogged down by yet another Artyom gets kidnapped and you have to stealth your way back out of it
again.
That
happens like 3 times in like the first hour and a half.
And it's like Far Cry 5's biggest problem all over again.
Yeah, it's just frustrating because the opening is not indicative of the rest of the game. The opening is very structured and very set piece heavy and very linear. You don't get to explore, you're funneled through combat encounters, and the game just takes control away from you over and over again, which is so frustrating. But then it does open up and it does finally justify its premise and it gets to the good stuff. But for anyone playing it, it might just be totally put off by it because it feels like a game from 2010.
Well, you text me when we had access to it like a few days ago, and you mentioned me and you were like, I think it might be bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe. Like, I kind of always thought, because I like 2033 and Last Light, I like them. I never loved them. I always liked the idea, and I love the idea that there's a really good solid like narrative or story, you know, the novels and stuff. You have a good like world building to get to. And then it was always like, well, I hope they get there. And yeah, I remember playing the start of Exodus and going, oh God, yeah, like what have they done? But it has that kind of weirdly stilted intro. I think one of the biggest issues that gets in the way, or one of the most noticeable things, is that Artyom is a silent protagonist, which he always has been. But he talks in the cutscenes in between chapters, and you can read his like journal or whatever, so you can get a good sense of character from him. But then they write all these weird scenarios where, like, it's like Metal Gear 5. It's like they write characters that address him and address him in scenarios where he needs to respond and he just doesn't. And like, and you were saying, like, you know, you can't believe that in 2019, you know, in the modern sort of video game landscape, that you're still doing a silent protagonist in such an obvious way.
I do not like this decision at all. It's just jarring. The dialogue itself, like you said, and I'm sure we'll get to, is not the best.
I think it's right
fine.
Now.
Well, fine, we'll get to it right
now.
Why
not?
Dialogue
hey?
Is not the best, although it is serviceable, but it's made worse because these characters just talk at you and you don't have kind of conversations. Like Anna specifically, especially, who's your wife in the story, just constantly tells you how much she loves you.
Are you never going to say it back?
You're never going to say it back. And you're just kind of there, like tapping her on the shoulder, like, there.
There's one bit where you're sort of consoling her, and the game just gives you like a rotating, like three or four animations where you can stroke her a bit, you can pat her on the head, you can sort of say, you can sort of nod, and it's nothing, and she's just like, I love you so much, we've been through so much, and you must just be in real time going... just nothing, just nodding your head. And like, there was another time when it's right at the beginning of the game, so don't worry about a major spoiler, but you know, you do sort of, you go AWOL for a bit, you get lost underground, and you go off to do like, you do a series of story missions, and you go out of radio signal coverage, so when you find the radio starts crackling back into life, and Anna's the first one who's screaming after you going, oh my God, Artyom, you're alive, like, so can you hear me, like, whatever. Nothing from Artyom at all. Not even like a cough.
The only reason those two are together is because there's no other the people on Earth left, right? He has terrible communication skills.
He doesn't have any at all.
He cannot sustain that relationship. Yeah, it's only made so jarring, and we are taking the mick out of it, but it's only so jarring because he does speak during the like in-between scenes.
He's clearly a very thoughtful guy as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, his journal is like very like emotionally, like not necessarily emotionally wrought, but you know, he gets across the weight of surviving in the apocalypse and not knowing whether like spending time on the surface is going to lead to anything, whether he's wasting his time, whether he should just stay underground where the safety is.
That's the problem. He has thoughts, and I want to know them.
Yeah, I
hate just getting them in these bite-sized bits. It's just, it's frustrating, and I think because the character, it's frustrating because the rest of the game's good.
Yes.
And I genuinely do think, although the dialogue is serviceable, the characters in particular are really great, and I love spending time with them. Mm. But that could have been so much more had we actually had conversations and not just it being them talking at me and telling me their entire life story. There's no kind of two-way thing. There's no give and take. There's no me finding out about them and them finding out about me and that affecting how they speak to me. It's just monologues and exposition, which... It's fine, but it could have been so much more.
Yeah, I think I remember I texted you after I got through a little bit more, and I was like, this is a video game ass video game.
Yeah.
Like, this is like the most, like, no, you will come to me style video game. And it's just fine. I don't want I don't need or want handholdy tutorials, but they barely explain anything. Like, you know, you get kind of pushed out into the open world, and you get funneled down a few different sequences at the beginning, but then it opens up, and then you start to get a sequence or a variety of different open worlds, open world chunks. And that's when you start figuring things out. But there is that weird sense of just not really knowing like how much I'm supposed to be invested in the story at any given moment. Like how much, because every character talks to you with this like emotional weight, but you never reciprocate it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's kind of all set dressing and I'm saving the humanity. Well, I'm saving this little chunk of humanity and things like that. But for me, that the voice side of it really got in the way.
Yeah, same.
But we can kind of use that to segue into the way that the environment's designed, because one of the biggest things that hit me up front was how gorgeous it looks.
It is beautiful. I mean, I've been playing it on the PlayStation 4 Pro.
I'm not sure
what the difference
is. I'm just on the original Xbox.
What are you going to do?
Yeah,
beautiful. Eh?
Yeah, I've heard it. I mean, honestly, the texture work that they've got going on is like phenomenal. I'm not sure how much they used photogrammetry, which is like something that, like, what the hell was the last game that used it? Battlefront 2 used it.
Yeah.
Basically, you take a whole bunch of photos of any given thing and you scan them in, so you do get a photoreal look. And their texture work, like, you know, I remember being on the train, because you eventually get onto one of the trains, and you're leaving the city, and I just was randomly talking to a character, and there was just some like metal work I don't know, like flecks of paint. And I was like, that looks so good. That's the best fleck of paint I've ever seen.
Kind of investigating
like, zooming in to be like, that's just, I mean, honestly, like, a few times I was like, this is the best looking thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's like, because obviously, I mean, the initial debut of it was the Xbox One X thing. And it was like, look at this thing, it's in 4K. So how does it look in terms of like, do you feel like a general sort of wow factor?
I do. Like, there's often times where I just sort of stop and have to look at it. There is one moment again on the train right at the very beginning where the fog is kind of coming over, like the icy fog, and everything's snowy in the background. And there was just two characters talking, but it just looks so good. There are like the effects in the game, especially with its lighting. And like I said, the fog specifically, it makes it look, it just makes it pop. And everything is just of a high quality. I think the character models look really good. Sometimes the voice acting and the lip syncing makes them look a bit uncanny valley. They just sort of stare at your face and like a mother mouth. But for the most part, it looks exceptional. And I think the way it immerses you into this world, not only through the graphics, but then the complementary mechanics, like you said, it does just throw you into it. But everything is kind of detailed in game. There is very minimal UI elements. The HUD is very limited. You have to sort of check your own body to sort of see whether how much time you've got left in your gas mask and your weapons and stuff like that. And I think the visuals combined with those elements does a really fantastic job of immersing you in this world and making you feel like you're a part of it.
Like you are like a real survivor. That was where it all started to click, because at the beginning, they, like I said, they lean so much into the narrative delivery stuff, and it's like, oh God, this is so jarring because of the line delivery. Yeah. And because of the fact that even though it is like the end of a trilogy or it's the third installment, the Metro series like does have its really good, really solid world building, really good socio-political comments on, you know, like nuclear proliferation or, you know, potential apocalypses, whatever. But the way that Exodus starts is pretty much doesn't even go anywhere near 2033 and Last Light initially.
No, no.
And so it's like, you can pretty much just pick this up and run. But because of that, for me, it didn't really click, and I didn't start to really love it until I got into those open world areas where it starts to become a hell of a survival game.
Yes.
And you're like, you have to get your head around the controls, but you know, you're holding the D-pad, you're sort of like zooming in with your night vision goggles, you're sort of like patching up your visor, like literally just getting like a patch of, I don't know, paper or whatever it is, and like covering a crack on the visor because you've just been in some like skirmish. And like ammo conservation is a big deal. Like there's a lot of elements like that really make you go like, I'm just scraping by.
Yeah.
And then that weird kind of like industrialized like approach to the whole world design, art direction, all that starts to click. And then, for me, I had to just kind of put the story to one side. Like I'm only like, I don't know, 5-6 hours in-ish. And you were saying you spent a lot of time exploring as well. Like,
that's it. I've spent far too long exploring because there are issues if you do spend too long. But it's just so good to, like you said, survive in this world, even though you have a home base to go back to and people to provide for. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of like the Red Dead Redemption 2 thing where you're going out on your own, you're sort of supporting your team. And that sort of loop of scavenging, sorting out your weapons, making sure your mask isn't going to crack in the thick of it. Uh-huh. It's unbelievably compelling, I find. Even though you're ostensibly doing the same thing as you are in any other post-apocalyptic game, you're smashing X and picking up resources and getting your backpack
you
out.
You really need them,
things.
Though.
But really need them. It has a really great flow between making you feel powerful. Like if you spent 20 minutes scavenging and you've sorted your weapons out and they're all clean and they won't jam, you feel powerful for when you get into a firefight. Mm-hmm. But after that firefight's done, you're back to square one again and you have to go through the whole thing all over again. So there's never a feeling that you've mastered the world or that you're too powerful. Mm-hmm. And there's also not a feeling of you're always on the back foot and you're always scraping by. Mm-hmm. There's a mixture of both. That is just, for me, that's what I want out of a post-apocalyptic game.
Totally. I think that's the thing that they nail the most, like giving value to loot. Because like, you know, in so many games, like loot is so disposable. You're swapping things out. You're even re-rolling the exact same items so you can get a better number attached to it. The way that Metro does it, like even their design of the weapons, like you've got these like weird, like steampunky, like pump action, like rifles and stuff that fire ball bearings, and you've got to like manually hold X and then press the right trigger. Like hold X to get a hold of the front handle, right trigger so you crank it, so that you've got enough shots ready for the next time. Which led us, we were talking earlier, pardon me, I'm so ill, by the way. Oh dear God.
No, I'm going to get so ill as well.
I know, it's like being in a radiated wasteland. So kind of, it's the immersion. But one of the things that we talked about before we started recording was you can go out, you can explore, like there are story missions that will happen in these different like, little pockets of the open world, but you can get there ahead of time.
Yeah.
And you can kind of break it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I'll give you one example, and you talked about this as well. But there's one bit when you have to go and you have to basically retrieve a train carriage, like a train car, and it's tucked away inside this warehouse. And when you finally get it, the railroad takes you back to where you started, basically. And the guy on the comms is like, hey, you know, you're going to encounter some resistance on the way back because this one rail you now need to take is going to go through all these gang places. But for me, I'd already cleaned them all out.
Yeah.
So none of that dialogue made any sense. And then I just rode the train car peacefully with no game gameplay for about 5 minutes, just like, you know, sauntering back to the start point. It was nice and tranquil, and it was like, just because of the day-night cycle, it was right during dusk. So it still worked, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
But there is that sense of, like, playing, tinkering with the world can kind of undo some of the other moments.
Honestly, I did the exact same thing.
Right.
I think that's one of, actually, the better examples of it. Like, I don't think that impacts it as much. It still impacts it, but I cleared that place out first. So when I was driving through, I got the same message, and I was like, well, it's fine. I've killed them all anyway, so if anything, I'm being rewarded for forward planning. In the second major area you go to, which is sort of a desert, I encountered this far more. Everywhere I was exploring was sort of cornered off for a story mission, so I would be spending 30 minutes, 40 minutes sort of searching the area, figuring out what to do in there, and yet I couldn't progress, and it just genuinely was a waste of time, because I came back later on with a dude, and it was slightly different, and I could go through a certain path that I was arbitrarily locked off before. I didn't think it did a great job of kind of rewarding my freedom or my kind of my inquisitiveness during those situations. And it's only a problem, because I know what you're going to say, just do the story missions and then explore later. That's how
in
it
theory,
should be.
But that, it doesn't tell you that.
But it doesn't tell you that. If you do trigger certain story missions, they aren't signposted and you will get ushered onto the next area and you won't be able to come back and to sort of find those areas that you missed in the first place. So you do want to explore every single place before you get to the story missions, but then at the same time, you're kind of not rewarded for doing so, especially in that second area. I think the first one has elements of it, but it's mostly fine. The second one's really bad for it, and then the rest kind of you encounter it, but it's not too bad.
Yeah, because when we're not saying that, like, I don't think that you need, like I said, like a handholdy tutorial or anything, but it's a weird sensibility to break down, because some games just happen upon that guiding hand mentality. Like, you don't always know where you need to go in Breath of the Wild, but you will find something, you will get somewhere. And then sometimes in Metro, it's so hands off that you kind of go, okay, well, the narrative is kind of open ended. It's like, hey, go scavenge and go, like, you need to, like, retrieve people, but, you know, it is kind of open ended. But then if you're too open ended with your approach, you'll happen upon encampments that you're supposed to fight later, and things like that. So it's a little bit of it stumbles a little bit, but it doesn't necessarily get in the way of immersion. It just kind of means that you're rewarded ahead of time with better gear because you already scavenged that one place ahead of time. Which, let's just talk about the combat, which is one of the things that I love the most.
It might be because
I've not done that much of it. Like I said, only 5-6 hours ish. But like the way that the combat works, I love all their reactive dialogue they have. It reminds me of Manhunt, where characters talk to each other. I mean, it's not new for Metro or anything, but like if you go into hiding, like a little light on your suit tells you that you're invisible.
Yeah.
So you duck away inside some bush or something, and you'll hear like people shouting across camps, going, "Is he over there?" Like, "Oh, I found him over here," or like whatever. They don't even speak American, so it's not that. But you know, there's people trying to find you, and I remember that in Manhunt, the first time I disappeared in Manhunt, and two characters talked to each other and said, "Oh, did we lose him?" Like whatever. And I love that. I love that they're, even though it's just dialogue, I love that their scripting feels like you're actually getting hunted by people.
Yeah.
And that idea of going up, like the power fantasy side of it again, where you're going up against, like, you know, a formidable foe kind of thing. And so popping off the headshots and, you know, taking people out stealthily.
They're satisfying headshots.
Headshots are very satisfying. Very satisfying. And then you have a choice as to whether you want to knock someone out or kill them, which we can get back to how that seems to affect some of the story.
I couldn't possibly say.
I don't want you to see the spoilers, but I have one example that I can give.
Cool.
Which we'll stay away from spoilers, but it seems like, even though at the beginning I was like, why am I even giving a choice other than just for the player? But it seems like that does matter. But your general thoughts on combat stuff.
I think combat can be really good. I think when you're fighting guard, like dudes, regular soldiers, it's satisfying. The guns have such a great sense of weight.
Steampunk as hell.
Yeah, like such a good kick. Like you said, there is something satisfying about them being so manual. Like when you have to pump the sort of ball bearing gun, it's really good. Popping off headshots is great. The idea of ammo conservation, when you spend too many bullets on a person, you feel like you've failed.
Why are you going down?
It's like, just stop. I'm wasting all my ammo on you. I could have just headshotted you.
Yep.
But when you do pull it off, it is it's great. I think the stealth lets it down for me.
Right.
I feel like a lot of the time, I think the AI is just sort of brain dead.
Yes.
Sometimes I'm right, like as close to.
That's why I made the distinction about dialogue, because it's more in the dialogue than it is in the way they move.
Yes, exactly. Because they are. It's the same with the other Metro games, which is why it's more disappointing. I think if it was the first time the franchise had tried stealth, I'd have been more kind of open to it. But this is a problem that sort of plagued Last Light and the original in completely different ways. But trying to get a dropping these guys seems just kind of like arbitrary. I don't know when I'm in spotting range. I know you've got a light meter on your arm and you do get a sort of audio cue, but it never...
It's super binary, though. It's like either you're in full view, there's a firework display up your arse, or you're completely invisible and you're right in front of a guy and they don't even see you, which is very old school. It's a very like mid-2000s way of doing
stuff. It really is. That's probably the only area of the combat that really feels dated, because you're doing the same thing you do in all those other games. You're either stabbing dudes to death from behind, you're knocking them out, you're headshotting them with silenced pistols, or you're throwing knives at them.
Yeah.
And it's like, we've done that before in Far Cry, and it's solid. It like works, but it's just, it's not how I wanted to play the game.
No, same. Something hilarious as well on the immersive side is that weird ball bearing firing thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Its description says that it's silent. It's so not silent.
It's not, is it?
No, but its description says, oh, a silent, sleek weapon. And I was like, so does that mean I can just shoot it right next to a guy and they won't? Yes, it does. You just go, you just headshot a guy. It's like, boom, like loud as hell. And like the whole camp just completely,
what?
Like nothing at all. Even though my superpowered steampunk gun is just killing everybody one by one. And on the gun front as well, I love the way that they do that. I can't remember how much of this was in Last Light, but I love that they ostensibly only have a handful of like base versions of every weapon. And so everything that you're finding is like the kind of cobbled together, like basically it's hard to explain, because it's like you have like a base version of a shotgun, a base version of a rifle, a base version of a revolver. And so every time you come across something in the real world, the diagram that pops up on the hood will be like little version of the revolver with all these attachments onto it. So it's like that person that owned that gun has like bolted a scope and a stabilizer and whatever. So when you pick it up, you can either pick up that whole gun and just use it, or you can take all the parts off it and then craft your own custom gun later on. So you end up with your version of a rifle and your version of a shotgun. And I love that. I don't. Was that in Last Light?
I can't remember if it was in Last Light. I know you could definitely modify your weapons. I don't know if it was that extensive. Usually I don't like that.
Right.
In Fallout 4, for instance, I thought it got to a point where I was just creating these super weapons and I was not really incentivized to experiment. But with this, the resources at your disposal are limited enough where you can't just go mad and rely on the same weapons, but creative enough where you can transform a pistol into this shotgun hand cannon thing. And it is satisfying. Like, it's always a thrill to see a weapon that has all those red markers on of new attachments and like taking them, either just swapping it completely or taking them off and knowing you can use them later. That's the way the weapons work, and they feel like yours as well.
Yes,
that makes sense. That sounds ridiculous.
No,
like,
I'm with it.
Because you've crafted them,
yeah,
and because you've spent so much time with them and you've modified them, they feel like this is like it's your gun.
Well,
you know what I mean?
That's why I never, when I'm coming across some random thing in the open world, I didn't say overworld. I don't just swap it. I always like just scavenge it because I'm like, no, this is my pistol.
Exactly.
Like, because you can get like a double-barreled, like vertically double-barreled revolver that like fires these like big, massive ass shots with a laser scope on the top. And I'm just like, yeah, that's my gun.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna, you know, like that's Artyom's gun or whatever. And so, yeah, when you're out there exploring, I kind of find myself adding to everything rather than replacing it. And I love that they really make a good point of like, you know, you kind of yearn for those workbenches when you get to go home with all your spoils. And it's like, here's all these clockwork mechanisms that I picked up. I'm just gonna bolt this weird slide onto this gun. And that's one of the things that I love the most. I don't know how much that like changes over the course of like most of the game or whatever.
Yeah, well, you'd end up finding sort of other variations of the regular base weapons that you can also add attachments to. Mm-hmm. It continues. It's not like incredibly robust, but you do find new things to keep it sort of fresh, even if you don't want to swap out your guns, because I mean they're the ones you've been relying on for the past 12 hours, and they are your guns. I love that system.
Yes.
I wish more first-person shooters did it. It rewards you for scavenging as well, so you do have incentives to sort of not only go out but come back to a base, like you said, whack your backpack on one of those gear tables and just go to town.
Which is what I used to like a lot about The Last of Us as well. And Metro, I mean, Metro's had crafting before, but I found myself crafting like on the fly, like in the moment kind of thing, a hell of a lot more than the past two, where like, you know, you just hold LB or L1 and you press X or A and you just whip out your backpack and you have a certain amount of things you can craft, like medicine and the different the gas masks, like filters and stuff. How much did those things, do you think, get in the way of the overall gameplay? How much of it is just an arbitrary restriction? Like, every now and then you need to refresh your breath mask.
I like
things
it.
Like that.
Right. I like it. I think it does add to the immersion overall. I think it's just, it's because this game is ostensibly, I think, even more so than the other one, sort of a survival horror game.
I think they found their niche more.
They have. You do have, like, the ammo conservation. You do have this very mechanical animation-based focus. You can't just flip into a menu and sort of have your gas mask on or have it changed. You need to physically do it. It's the same with either whipping out what you call one of those things?
The lighters?
A lighter.
Yes.
Either whipping out
flame
lighter,
creator.
A flame creator.
One of them.
To set fire to the cobwebs, or when you sort of brush your face and do that.
Yeah, you did. Because you get
dirty. Useless.
It is, isn't it?
In the old games, you used to do this and then
do a bit of a John Cena.
Yeah, you do a bit of a John Cena and then it actually did something. But in this, I've never really got dirty enough to have to do it. I like that it's there.
That's one of the strangest things at the beginning, like I was saying earlier on about like you kind of get assailed with all these different mechanics, and it's like you're walking through an area, it's right at the beginning, and it's like, hey, hold LB and press X to bring out your lighter, and I'm like, why? It's fully lit. Like, why would I do this? And then it's because it wants you to learn that you can burn cobwebs. And I'm like, why would I do that? And I still don't know. But like, I can randomly, well, I do know, it's because they slow you down. But like that, it tells you that randomly, and then you have a bit of a firefight, and then it says, hey, press LB to fix your mask, and I'm like, is it broken? Because there's no meter telling me that it is, but there's a crack, so I need to like patch that up. And then you get used to like, oh, you can take your mask off and put it back on based on when the clicks are happening around your like your radiation meter, and you kind of start like micromanaging all those things.
Yes.
It's just that the on, like, I don't know, people in the wanky game press, including ourselves, call it the onboarding process. And the onboarding of Metro is like a bit weird. I've leveled up now. I've never used it, but I thought I'd bust it out. It's like when I said optics the other week. I've never stopped using optics now. But you know, you might as well.
I'm pleased I've shared in that experience.
Yeah. Onboarding. Now it's everywhere.
I'll use it.
Yeah. But the way that like that whole opening bit goes, I think that they wanted to tick the box of the expectation that was left from the Xbox demo, because the way that it got showed off on the Xbox One X thing was like, he's like Artyom's on like a zip line and he fights a big monster, and then he leaves on that exploding train. And nearly all of that is because like compacted and punched and kicked into that opening hour.
Yeah.
down to the same bit where the monster gets right up in your face. Same thing from the Xbox One reveal. And I wonder how much they had that in mind when they were like, oh, we need to satisfy that crowd.
Yeah, probably, because there are a lot of those moments in the opening. Like, again, it takes control away from you, which I don't like, but you do get those satisfying monster in your face, just jab it with a knife moments. I think you get a lot of those out in the gameplay as well, which is very good once you do start exploring and interacting with the monsters, because I think they're the best part of the game.
Oh, really?
Monsters, I don't really like... Fighting dudes is all right. I can fight dudes in any game. I can't fight these winged terrors in any
other
game.
That's true. And
the first time I saw one of those, when it sort of comes down, you can see its shadow on the floor.
Yes.
You know it's overhead, and it swoops in, and it picks you up, and it chucks you. I crap my pants off.
See, the loading screen told me that after I'd been attacked by one, but the loading screen tells you, hey, look, if you see, I don't know what they're called, but if you see this big winged lad, watch out, because they can grab you and they'll take you back to their nest. And there is a side mission associated with meeting one of them anyway. But yeah, stuff like that, those weird little sort of dynamic interactions with creatures that they've clearly like made for the game. Because then one of the nearest comparisons is going to be Fallout, and we might do more stuff on pairing Metro off against Fallout.
It is very Fallout.
It is in spots, yeah, but then it's like you go back through the franchise, and obviously Metro has been doing this stuff alongside. It's just that it never really got noticed. It's kind of like how some people started pairing off, including ourselves, Witcher 3 with Scrolls.
Yeah.
And it's like, obviously Scrolls have been going a bit longer, but you know, the Witcher series does things better than Scrolls sometimes. But do you think the Metro executes in a way that Fallout doesn't?
Yes, I think it's a sort of, if you go to Fallout and then you want a sort of, because Fallout is great. I really do love
Fallout. Yeah, I used to once. 2008. Remember 2008? Yeah,
shut up. It's still good, Scott. It's still really good.
76,
I
mean,
like,
is it?
I played 150 hours of Fallout 4.
Someone had to.
The problem is, though, if you want sort of the hardcore sim post-apocalyptic experience, you're not going to get that from Fallout. Fallout was more fun, it's more irreverent, whereas Metro wants to kill you all the time. It really, really wants to kill
Which
you.
Which is what I want.
It satisfies that. Like, you get, on the surface, you could put a screenshot from Fallout 4 and a screenshot from Metro Exodus side by side, and although the pure graphical fidelity would give it away, you might be convinced to think that they were both the same game, especially in the first area when you're scouting out raiders' encampments and using this kind of weird bolt-action pistol.
Yes.
But I think Metro kind of just scratches a completely different itch.
Yes, absolutely. I think the comparisons are almost aesthetic and art direction based in terms of here's a post-apocalypse.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of them is set in the West, one of them is set in, like, you know, Eastern Europe or whatever. And so you have architectural differences and stuff. But sometimes when you're just looking out over the wasteland, I did get that feeling of, this is what I wish Fallout was. So that was me.
Well, this is what I'm interested in. Because obviously fans are going to come to this sort of new game and realize it's open world and you're not in the metro stations anymore.
Right.
I wonder how much that's going to impact its identity. Because like the Witcher 3 comparison, when that started gaining sort of comparisons to Skyrim, that's when it finally went open world for the first time.
True.
And I think it's the same thing with Metro Exodus. Like,
2 was always pretty big.
2 was... Yeah.
Not like not a
big,
proper open world. Yeah, like whatever.
It's not like a proper open world. Whereas
just
Metro,
for that guy in the comments, he'll be like, you know.
We need to clarify.
Yeah,
every
now and then.
But Metro, on the other hand, by moving away from the actual Metro stations and going open world, you are spending a lot more time around areas that have been done before. Like I'm not sure if you're there yet, but the desert place.
Not just yet.
It's just Mad Max. and that's fine, but it does take influence from these other games and these other post-apocalyptic media, whereas the Metro identity or whatever was very much rooted in those stations. Yeah, you were on the surface, but they were far more dangerous than the surface was in kind of Fallout, and I wonder how that's going to impact not only its identity going forward. I'm sure that'll attract a lot more players who like Fallout, and then soon they're going to like this, but I wonder how the hardcore are going to sort of...
Yeah, and I wonder how much that was a conscious thing as well, where it's like, where else can we go? We've already done 2 games here. And I haven't read the Metro book, so I don't know how much they've exhausted the source material. But for me, it's a positive change, because I didn't finish Last Light, and it wasn't necessarily because of the repetition of the levels, but immediately Exodus has this really great, memorable look to it.
Yeah.
And you were mentioning the monsters being some of the most fascinating things. There's a blue orb in this game.
I'm sick of hearing about this blue orb
that I don't think was in the Blast games, but it's like some weird like electric demon, which sounds cooler than it is, because it's a big old floating it looks nice. I mean, for the sake of the graphics, looks lovely. Nighttime, you're walking through some abandoned train cars on your way back to whatever building you're going to go to, and you just see some like lightning bolts just coming out from behind like a hill.
And what did you do?
Well, I went to see what it was, didn't
Why?
I? Well, because it might add some loot or something. I don't know what I could have equip. And I thought, I'll go see what it is. Killed me in two shots. I thought, right, I'm going to respawn. I'll try again. Killed me again. So, but my point was going to be that the sheer variety of the enemies is a hell of a thing, because I was not expecting a death-dealing blue orb.
No, I don't. Nor was I. But I can't get over this, right? I'm going to have to go back to it, right? When you're a kid and you touch the oven and your mum says, oh, don't touch the oven.
Right, yeah.
You learn your lesson. You don't go back and touch the oven again, Scott. Why did you go back to the blue orb?
Well, I needed to see. I didn't believe what it was, because I didn't expect. Because until then, all you'd seen is big old demons, big old winged things, weird mutated rats, and a giant crawfish thing, catfish. And so like, you think you know what you're getting, and then randomly at night, it's like, why is there an electric orb? Like, it looks like a summon from Elder Scrolls. It looks like a random familiar type thing that you can just like summon in. I was like, what the hell is that? That's some weird supernatural thing. And you eventually. I was going to say you talk to the people that you rescue and find out. You don't talk to them; they talk to you. But you do get to find out what it is.
Yeah.
And so there is that. I was going to address something earlier as well when you said about it takes control away from you. Mm-hmm. Because one of the coolest things that it does, even though it does sometimes, it just plays the game for you, especially during a particular getaway chase where it's just jumping back and forward between stuff and whatever. Yeah, yeah. I do think it's impressive on a rendering side that they did all of it in essentially one take. Like, not all of it, sorry. It's every chapter. Each chapter is one take. Because it does fade down. You get Artyom's voiceover in the chapter breaks.
That's true.
But the rest of it is all one take, quote unquote, which made me think of Uncharted 2, you know, the big train level.
Yep.
And it's like, how much was their expanse that they had to build, especially in terms of that getaway thing, to all be one take?
I was also thinking that when I was, every time I'm on the train, I always think, how much of this are they repeating? It doesn't look like they're repeating much, but...
I always do that in games, like, how much can I stand and look out the window and be like, well, I'm going to see the same thing twice.
I took that for granted, to be honest, because every single chapter, every single sort of new major mission is just, there's no loading screens unless you die.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to, like, when you go into buildings or when you go into the major areas, you don't have to sit through a loading screen.
No.
So, which kind of makes, because I did have a gripe that the loading screens in... Screams? Loading screens.
The loading screens.
The loading screens in this game are long. They're really long and it takes a long time to get in there.
It might be different on the Pro, but on the Xbox, if you do the whole instant on thing where you leave your game, like, paused and you turn your console off, major fire hazard, you leave that on. I mean, it probably isn't, but you never know. That's what I always think when I leave it on. I was like, I want to play it straight away when I come home from work.
Just leave it on.
I know, but then I'm like, it's probably going to burn the place down. Hasn't yet, so not to worry. But if you leave it on there, when you come, if you've like just saved or something and you need to, like, I saved in a bad place.
Yeah.
I was in the middle of a combat thing. I had to leave. Got a wife. And I was like, I need to go do stuff. And so when I came back, I booted the Xbox up. I was still in the middle of combat and then I died and it took 15 minutes to get back again, just because it's a little percentage climber in the bottom right, and I'm just like, it's still on 10 after like 5 minutes, and I was like, I've broken this.
I see that as well.
Yeah.
The quick save system, we worked like a charm for the first 15 hours or so, and then suddenly stop quick saving.
Maybe can you even save in this game?
I don't know, because you can quick save.
You can quick save.
I don't know if you can probably save. I've done it, and I still don't really know.
I was, because I didn't trust it. I was like, well, because I naturally don't trust quick saves. It's like when you make a manual save and you save again just to make sure it's saved, or I save over the quick save to make sure. Yeah, I've never found a manual save yet, but it always pops up with a little animation in the bottom letting you know that everything's okay. But I don't know how much I trust it.
I don't know how bad it is on the version you've played on the Xbox One, but on the PlayStation 4 Pro, at least from the game I can vouch for, it's quite a buggy and glitchy game. I lost a lot of progress, to be honest, the other night when it didn't quick save for a long time, and then I went to get my map out while I was in a car and it just froze and I had to quit and I lost about 30 minutes.
That's bad. The last point I had was any potential negatives. Is your biggest potential negative this?
Just a general frustrating because of how beautiful and how ambitious it is. There is I find there's a general lack of polish.
It's just not there.
To it. It's not quite there. And that's why, for me, it's not the Witcher 3 moment. Because there are technical shortcomings and there are a lot of glitches that also plague the other games. And that's why it's more frustrating.
Yeah.
There are enemies just kind of pop in. There's a lot of texture popping as well. Mm. A lot of the times, I'm not sure if you experience the same, but hitboxes wouldn't work. I would throw like the daggers at a guy, and it would just go through him. And then at one point, I walked up to him and he was just doing like, he was just frozen.
No way.
I didn't know what to do, but I've had that quite a few times. I've had the game just crash on me. I'm not sure if this is your experience.
I've honestly
not,
weirdly, and this isn't just hyperbole. I mean, I own a PS4 Pro. Old me would have said, oh, let's go PS4 Pro.
Yeah.
No, I've got a PS4 Pro. No, I haven't had anything like that.
I am so pleased I got footage for this, because when the review goes live and I complain about
it,
other people don't have it. They're going to accuse me of being a liar, but it did happen. I've got footage of it.
The newest thing I had to something like that is the, because there's a weird like snap on lock on, and sometimes that betrays itself, like it'll just lock onto something that's behind the thing you're trying to shoot at. So I had like a few little glitches like that, nothing in the way of texture pop.
Interesting.
Maybe like one instance of it, of a monster like just appearing, but I was already running through a pretty busy area. I had no health left, so I had to get back to safety. So I kind of had something like that, but yeah, not very much. So it might be something that is just down to the pre-release build, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
But the sheer severity of that kind of implies something a bit more core.
I don't know. For me, it broke the immersion that the rest of the game built up so well. It was the same with kind of the enemy AI, especially with the mutants that just run at you. I felt like sometimes they would just run up to me and not do anything,
bounce off you,
run away. And it was fine because I meant I got to kill them and not lose any health. But it broke the illusion in a way.
I do know what you mean.
Scary, yeah.
There's one again. I wish I knew about the name of the monsters. There's one particular beast that keeps like it's one of its animations is to like howl at the moon essentially, and it does that by climbing up on a car or a high point and then doing it. But it was just doing that over and over again. But not in a row. But every time I came to that one area, there was that beast howling at the moon again. So I was like, dagger to the head again.
Another little problem.
Go on.
I'm not sure how widespread it is, but every time I've cleared out a monster's nest like this, every time I come back, they're already back. They're already there again. They've all respawned, and it feels like a waste of resources, especially if I just run slightly away.
That's a good point.
And
because
then return,
the...
it's like, what was the point of this? Because monsters' lairs don't, at least from what I've experienced, don't often have loot.
I was going to say the loot doesn't come back.
No.
So there is that. Overall, though, what's your general takeaway point? It's a recommendation.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's four stars, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing. We've kind of been slagging it off.
No, we haven't. We've been a solid measured
co-
and plus, check out Josh's review.
Check out our review. I also shoot in it there as well. But here's the thing. It has flaws.
Yes.
Like all Metro games before, it has a lot of flaws. Mm. But when it clicks, it is just so easy to love, I think. And the atmosphere it creates and the sense of survival and even the narrative I quite like. It's beautiful. Mm. It just does, unfortunately, have these things that drag it down. For me, they're not that important. Mm-hmm. It's just you need to go in knowing that it makes a bad first impression.
Yeah, bad.
And two, it is not as polished as you might want it to be.
Yeah, and I think for me, it was the same. It's the same thing. Like totally, it was the opening was like I said, turgid. I hated that intro. I almost was like I can't because I don't need to review it. So I was like, I'm not going to get through it. And I was like, no, I play everything. That's my life. What is my life if I'm not going to give it a bit longer? And it did all click. I was so happy when I finally got out to that first open bit, and I was like, okay, I get what this game is now. Which is kind of why I wonder how much it's had this weird kind of personality identity crisis in terms of the way that it was shown off, and the way that like that intro tries to satiate that action heavy like fan base kind of thing and more audience, only to settle back into what it does best. So yeah, you guys can go check out Josh's review. Hopefully it'll be online by now. If not, just I don't know, find words.
Ups and Downs will be up on the website.
Ups and Downs will be up on the website, so you can find that too. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello and goodbye. Metro is good.
It is, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.